Ghosts, have they become a cliché? Or can we once again examine this phenomena seriously? After all, isn't it really our own afterlife we're curious about? Let's delve a little deeper on Jim Harold's Ghost Insight. Welcome to Ghost Insight. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. Now, for the most part on these programs, we talk about humans and the afterlife of humans, and yes, sometimes the ghosts of humans. But today we're going to talk about something different, and I think it's fascinating for anyone who is a pet lover. I'm always fascinated about these kind of discussions, and we have a great guest. I'm talking about award-winning animal communicator Karen Anderson. She has been professionally communicating with pets living or deceased for over 20 years. She is a psychic medium with the ability to connect with departed humans as well. She earned the prestigious first place award for the 2013 Reader's Choice Awards for Best Animal Communicator and the second place award the prior year. She discovered her special gift as a child. Her abilities developed over the years and became particularly significant when she was a deputy sheriff, and we're going to talk to her about that. She's appeared on many shows, including Coast to Coast AM with host George Norrie, Darkness Radio with host Dave Schrader, and Beyond Reality Radio with Jason Hawes. And we're so glad to have Karen on the show to talk about her recent book, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals, Messages and Signs from Our Pets on the Other Side. Karen Anderson, welcome to the program today.
Hi, Jim. Thank you. I'm really excited to be here today.
So this is something that's a great amount of debate. Even people who believe in an afterlife will draw the line at humans. They will say, well, you know, humans have souls, but animals are animals and they're different and they do not have souls. Why do you think that's wrong?
I think the evidence is in the actual sessions that I do. And, you know, I think it's great to have a healthy skepticism about anything new or maybe a concept outside of your comfort zone. Certainly I did. I'm a former police officer. So if we didn't have hard, cold facts and evidence, we didn't have a case. So I completely understand that. And I know it's outside of the realm of a lot of thought processes out there. But I think, first of all, most of us have either had a pet that we've lost or had to experience the loss of a pet and the grief that goes along with that. And in that, we've also experienced some afterlife communication with our pets on the other side, or we may have had vivid dreams about them or even heard them around the house or felt them or sensed them. My clients will report back to me that they are experiencing afterlife communication with their own pets. And many times that's how they find me. They're in search of getting more answers or more information from their pets. So I think it's just a personal journey, and you really have to experience it for yourself. And certainly I can say from over 20 years of connecting with the animals, once you hear the messages and hear what they know about us and that they're around us and with us, it's pretty amazing, and it's hard not to believe it.
This is a question because you were in law enforcement. I mean, how did you get involved in this? How does one discover that they're an animal communicator and that they can have dialogue with animals on the other side? How did it happen for you?
Well, it started very early in life. As far back as I can remember, I've always been able to understand the animals. So I believe we are all born with the ability to communicate with animals, and we have that in us. It's just that mine was highly developed, or I was more in tune with it because of my love for animals. But I thought back then as a kid, I thought everybody could understand what the pets were saying around us. I didn't realize it was something different or unique until a little bit later when I got a little bit older and realized that people would raise an eyebrow at me or, you know, tell me animals can't talk or that sort of thing. I grew up with watching Dr. Doolittle and Mr. Ed, the talking horse. And, you know, some of my favorite television shows were all about animals that could talk. Even the Disney movies that I grew up with, like Bambi and Jungle Book, all the animals could talk in those movies. So I grew up not doubting it. I grew up thinking it was possible. If the animals that I was watching on TV could talk, why couldn't mine? And so that's where it developed. And over the years, I kind of tucked it away until I was a deputy sheriff. And when it all started to come back to me was when I started to sharpen my intuitive skills while I was on patrol and while I was responding to calls. That's when everything started to kick in. For me anyway, I worked in a mountain district up in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, and I often worked alone at night. The nearest backup car was maybe a half an hour or more away. I had to trust my own instincts, my own intuition, my gut feelings, just for my own personal safety. So that's when I started to pay attention to the subtle clues and feelings I got when I was around suspects or criminals. I started reading their body language. I started watching their eye movements. And that's where it all started to snowball for me. And then I remembered how I had the ability as a child to communicate with animals. And that's when I realized that animals on crime scenes could provide me with detailed information about what happened, which was kind of mind-blowing at the time. It surprised me, but why not? They could tell me other things, so why couldn't they tell me what was going on at a crime?
And here's a question for you. I mean, how did you broach that with your colleagues, and how did you use that information that you would glean? Because, I mean, on one hand, I think that's fantastic. On the other hand, I could see maybe some people being skeptical. How was that received, and how did you work it into your work, seeing that maybe some people might raise an eyebrow?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I have to tell you, Jim, honestly, even my own family members thought I was nuts. So I wasn't about to tell anybody that I had the ability to communicate with animals. I kept that a very much a secret, and I kept it to myself. You know, it wouldn't look good on a police report that I put down that my confidential informant had four legs and a tail, right? So I just didn't tell anyone. I used the information that they provided to me to help me solve cases and to help me understand what happened. And that was just something I kept to myself and I didn't share with anyone. And, you know, as the years went by and I became a professional animal communicator, psychic, and medium, then I put it out there to the world that this is what I do. But certainly back as a police officer, no, I would have been, oh my gosh, I would have been the target of so many jokes and I would have gotten it from my colleagues for sure. You know, it's a boys club when you're a police officer. I was the only female on the department. So I had to do things better, smarter, faster, quicker than many of my male colleagues just to be accepted and to have them trust me on the department. So the last thing I was going to do was say, oh, by the way, the family dog told me where the suspect was hiding. No, I'm not going to do that.
And I've got to assume if you got information from that source, you would try to collaborate it via another source, and then you could point to that secondary source is where you got it from. I mean, that you would try to confirm it, probably just like a journalist would try to get multiple sources. You try to get the same, once you're clued into it, you try to figure out other ways to get that same information, and then you could use it in legal proceedings or those kind of things. I would assume that's how that works, no?
Exactly. And I can give you a perfect example. I got a call to domestic violence between a husband and a wife. And when I arrived on the scene, the wife showed me wounds that she had on her arms, red marks. And it looked like the husband had physically assaulted her. You separate the two. And when I was interviewing each of them, I started to suspect that maybe things didn't quite happened the way the wife was telling me. And I saw that they had a resident dog there. So I just quietly checked in with the dog and asked what happened. And the dog showed me that the wife was the aggressor. And so what she had done is she had put red marks on her arm to make it look like he had assaulted her, because this was not the first time we had been over there. This was an ongoing thing. And so she put marks on her arms because she knew that if she was the aggressor, she'd be going for a ride in the back seat of my patrol car. So I was able to confirm later with a neighbor that that's what she had done, even in some of the previous calls when we had been out there to that house, to make it look like the husband was the aggressor. So going in with that information of, you know, you've got somebody here that may not be telling you a straight story, and then just confirming it with the animals. Like you said, you rely on other sources too. You don't just go with what the animals are telling you.
Now, you mentioned in the book that you're a psychic and a medium. And I think a lot of times, and I find myself even doing it, I've been doing these shows for almost 13 years now, and even I do it, you almost use those words interchangeably. But what are the differences, and how do you make the, or do you make a distinction between being a psychic and being a medium?
Well, a psychic is somebody that can see perhaps future events about somebody, personal things in their life, career, relationship. A psychic is somebody that reads the energy of a person in the here and now. Somebody here that's with us, somebody that sits down with me for a face-to-face session or a phone-to-phone session. That kind of information is what I call psychic information. And you're right, it's very interchangeable, but they are really different. Whereas a medium is somebody who communicates with departed spirits. And in my case, I communicate with both human and animal departed spirits. So I have the ability to see ahead for a client's personal life or career or relationships, but I also have the ability to communicate with spirits. So therefore, I am a psychic and a medium. And they are interchangeable, but they really are two different things.
So how does animal communication work, whether you're talking about animals who are here or animals who are on the other side? I mean, what is the mechanism? How do you see all this working?
Well, the animals send us messages in a variety of different ways, and each animal is unique. Some are really good at sending messages and others aren't. So it just depends on the animal. But the main way that they will send us messages is through images. They'll flash an image in your mind, and it's just for a split second. It is like lightning fast. And it'll look like, and I'll give you an example, like you're talking to me right now in this program, but I want you to just picture for a second the American flag, the red, white, and blue, the stars and stripes. From that image, just picture the Statue of Liberty. And from that image, picture your kitchen at home. So as each of those images flash into your mind, they will then quickly fade as you go to the next image and the next thought. And that's exactly how animals send messages to me. And that's how I can pick up on them. So what I do before a session is I clear my mind. So I know that I'm not thinking about my kitchen or the Statue of Liberty or the American flag. I clear my mind through meditation. I have a process that I do to prepare for each session. And I open up to the animal. I use a photograph to connect. That's like having that animal's cell phone number. I basically dial up their energy with a photo. That's how I train myself. And upon doing that, once I open the energy, the animal can start sending images to me. So it may be something they show me around their house or around their human or maybe around their favorite treat or their favorite toy. And I can relay to my client what I'm seeing, describe it to them in full color. And I work with the clients to understand what the messages are because they don't always make sense to me. I don't always know what it is they're trying to show me or talk about. So that's one way of sending it. So do you understand that? Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And then they also can send feelings and emotions. They have the same types of feelings we have: happiness, fear, anxiety, stress, sorrow, sadness, grief. They can send those emotions. So in my process of preparing for a session, again, through meditation, I clear out whatever I'm feeling at that particular moment so that I'm open to receive whatever feelings or emotions come through once I open up to that animal's energy. And sometimes it's very subtle, Jim, like I'll barely get a sense of maybe some lingering sorrow or sadness about something. And other times it'll knock me out of my chair. Like when they send the love that they have for their own human caretakers, it can literally bowl me over. So they can send that really strong and amped up, or they send it very subtly, and I have to really pay attention. And the same is true with, they can send me words. I am mainly clairaudient, which means I can hear what they're saying. And that gets a little bit more complex, because, you know, animals don't speak the English language. So how can they send me words? But I have trained myself and I'm able to hear words, sentences, partial sentences, sounds, and I can relay all of that information to the client. And then the client then validates or confirms that information with their current situation or their knowledge of their pet. So I'm basically just a translator. The animals send me the message and I relay that information to their human. And then the human validates it and tells me, oh yeah, we have that going on, or my dog or my cat is doing this, or they're sick and they have, you know, if I get like a stomach upset, they'll say, oh yeah, my dog or cat is having digestive issues. So that's how it works. I'm merely a messenger and a translator.
So for example, I have two dogs and I've had dogs most of my life. And there are times when the dog is sitting there and you'll look in their eyes and they'll look in your eyes and you feel like you're having a communication. And even saying that, I feel like our people are going to think that I'm out of it. But but you really do feel that. And I feel that. So I'm really, even if we're not sensitive to your level, obviously, we are picking up on something that is real and they are communicating with us.
Oh, yes. And I have a great analogy for you. And when animals do that, when they kind of stare at us and they cock their heads and they're looking right at us and you have that moment where you feel like, oh, my gosh, you know, I totally am looking into their eyes and they get it. What they're doing is, as you're having those thoughts, just like before where we did the American flag and the Statue of Liberty and so on, as you have a thought such as how much you love your dog or your cat, or maybe it's time to feed them, or maybe it's time to take them outside or go for a walk, as you're having those thoughts, you are not knowing this, but you're flashing images across your mind of each one of those scenarios, and your pets can pick up on those images just like I can pick up on theirs. And a perfect example is if you have ever had to take a cat to their vet appointment long before you've even gotten that cat carrier out of the garage or the basement or wherever you have it, your cat is gone. They are like hidden. And it's like, how did they know? I didn't even pick it up. I didn't even make a sound with it. And I'll tell you how they know. As you're going about your morning or your day, you are running that thought through your mind. Oh, I have to get the cat to the vet at 10 o'clock this morning. I better go get the cat carrier. And you're actually flashing images of all of that in your mind, even putting the cat in the cat carrier. They've already picked up on those images. And that's why they're missing, because they know what's coming up. They can read your mind.
It is interesting. Or one thing that I'll see happen a lot of times, if something is happening, whether we're going to, as a family, go somewhere and maybe leave the dogs for a couple of hours, or we have company coming, or there's a big event like Christmas or something, the dogs will sense that something is going on. They'll know. And some of that is, of course, you know, if you're getting the house ready for guests or whatever, but some of it is just intuitive, it seems, that they know that something's going on. They just know.
Oh, yes. And you know, everyone who's listening right now that has a dog is nodding their head yes. And this is true because, you know, like one of my challenges is, how does your dog know that you're getting ready to take them for a walk when you haven't even picked up their leash yet, or you haven't walked to the door, or you haven't picked up your keys, or you haven't put your tennis shoes on yet? They are picking up on your thoughts as you flash that through your mind. You're thinking in your mind, okay, I'm going to take the dog for a walk. I have to get my keys. I have to get the leash. And then you're picturing going to the park because this is what we do, or wherever you're going to walk your dog out the front door. This is what we do as humans. Our thoughts lead us and we think about our plans and what we're going to be doing. The animals, our pets have learned to tune in to our thoughts. Granted, Jim, they tune us out about 95% of the time because it's human stuff that doesn't involve them. But when it's something that involves them or that they're really excited about, or in the case with taking the cat to the vet where they don't want to go, they tune into those images and they will respond and react accordingly.
Now, let's talk now about the other side. And where pets fit in. I mean, what is, different people have different views of the other side. People, some people think it is, there's a heaven and then there's that other place. And, you know, you go and that's where you spend eternity. Other people feel that, well, of course, we have people that feel nothing happens. And I don't think either of us are in that category. So we'll not even worry about that. Then some people think that wherever we go is a transitory state. It's like a waiting room waiting for your next life in terms of reincarnation. In general, what do you feel about the afterlife and what do you think about the place of pets within it?
Well, and I am speaking just from my personal experience with connecting with the other side and human and animal spirits. And again, this is my personal experience. We'll all know someday. But what I have found and what the animal spirits have told me is that their soul or their energy continues on. It is eternal. It never ends. And the same is true with our human loved ones. That soul or that energy or the essence of that person continues on. And I'm able to communicate with them and connect with them and receive very detailed information from them about their life, their loved ones. And to me, that is fascinating. And I think that's why I do this work, because it is, to me, it's just incredible to think, and it's mind-blowing to think that we can have a conversation with an animal or a human that is no longer in a living, breathing body, but they still have a consciousness and they can still connect with us and communicate with us. That's, to me, it's fascinating. So that's my passion. And to me, it's an honor to be able to relay that information. And I am very devoted to the spirits that I connect with. I take very good care of them. I try my very best to deliver exactly what they want me to share, good or bad. And I think for the people who don't quite believe that, that's fine. I don't know that I believed it in the beginning either. It was a slow process for me to go, wait a second, how can this happen? You know, how can a deceased cat or dog or horse or bird or whatever communicate with us from the other side? It sounds far-fetched. It sounds far out there. I agree. It does. And now that this is my job and this is what I do for a living and I've been doing it for so long, it still to this day fascinates me to the point where I want to know more. I want to find out as much information as I can from them and share that with their humans because of the incredible amount of healing that takes place after a communication session. Sometimes just the smallest, most innocuous little message can mean the most to a human loved one that's left here grieving, either for a human or animal companion that has passed away. So it really is a topic that is very intriguing and interesting. And for me, it is just kind of like a treasure trove of goodness. Like I want to get in there and just learn more and find out as much as I can because I'm still a student. I'm still learning. I don't know everything that there is to know about it, but I have had thousands and thousands of sessions where spirits, both human and animal, have communicated information to me that is, according to my clients, very accurate and very detailed and very reminiscent of their experience with that particular person or animal. So yeah, it's a intriguing topic for sure. And we don't know everything there is to know about it. And I just keep forging ahead and keep doing what I do because, you know, it's just all about, for me, opening up that line of communication and helping people realize that their loved ones are still connected to them. Their soul, their essence is eternal.
Now, we love stories here on the different programs. And is there a story along these lines that you'd like to tell us that kind of illustrates what happens in kind of the positive aftermath of a communication like this with a pet?
Oh my gosh, I have so many stories. You'll have to cut me off. So just feel free to jump in anytime and tell me, okay, Karen, that's enough. And like I said, sometimes it's the littlest message that means the most. And I'll give you a couple examples. One of my most memorable moments going back was when I very first started out in the psychic world. I was at a convention in Santa Monica, and this delightful little couple came in with a picture of their little dog named Nova. It was short for Casanova. And they loved this little dog, and they wanted to know how he was doing. So I opened up to the dog's energy, and I saw all these images of a very lush lifestyle, luxurious. They were very well-to-do people, so they had a yacht and a huge yard. And this little dog just went on and on about how he loved his life, and they were nodding their head, yes, 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 you know, we have all that stuff. And all I have is the dog's picture and his name. I don't know anything about these people. And so I'm describing to them everything that he's showing me, and they're listening there to every word. They're so tuned in to everything he's saying. When all of a sudden the little dog said to me, tell my mom and dad, I call you their parents, mom and dad. He said, tell my mom and dad that they smell to me.
Huh.
And I thought, oh no, I don't want to tell them that. So I got a little bit nervous, and I thought, how in the world am I going to tell this delightful little couple that they're little dog thinks they smell? That's awful. I don't want to do that. So I went back to the dog and I said, did you say that your mom and dad smell to you? And the dog goes, no, I said they spell to me. And then he proceeded to spell out the words like W-A-L-K and O-U-T. And I was just so relieved because I was not wanting to deliver this message that their dog thought they smelled. So I said to the couple, do you spell to your dog? And their eyes just like popped wide open. They said, oh my gosh, yes. We have to spell to him. He's so smart. He understands what we're saying unless we spell it out. And the little dog is in the background in my ear going, I still know what they're saying. I still know what they're saying. So that's the kind of like crazy stuff that comes through, where here I thought this little dog said they smell. No, he said they spell to me. So I have to really listen, because you can see what one letter can do in that message. That would have been horrible if I said, oh, by the way, your little dog thinks you smell. No, that would not be good. So that's one of my favorites, because it shows you the intelligence of the animal. Now, this was a living dog that told me that, but I only had his picture and I'd never met these people before. So an example of a deceased dog, a message that came through, one of my most favorites, is I was at another expo. I used to tour the U.S. doing psychic and holistic expos, and I would meet face to face with my clients there. In this one particular session, a woman came in and she had lost her German Shepherd mix, who had just recently passed away about 6 months earlier. And she was crying and upset and very sad. So I totally, you know, understand. I've lost so many of mine over the years, but I opened up to the dog's energy. And the whole time that I was trying to obtain information from this dog, remember, I only have the picture of the dog. The dog's, you know, passed on. It kept showing me a box of cereal. Over and over again, box of cereal. And when I would ask the dog, why are you showing me cereal? It wouldn't answer me. So I ignored the message, you know, just literally like flashing a box of cereal in my mind. So I ignored the message, kept ignoring it. Finally, I said to the woman that was sitting there, I said, is there any reason why your dog would flash a box of cereal at me? I don't know. Did you have cereal this morning? Do you like cereal? You know, what does that mean to you? Because I don't understand. And she said, no, no, I don't know what that means. I don't eat cereal. No, 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 no. And so we kind of went around trying to figure out this message. And finally I said, that's so weird. I just keep seeing a box of Fruit Loops. And she goes, Fruit Loop? Fruit Loop. That was her nickname. We used to call her Fruit Loop. So that's, now I was shocked. So that's how this works. I don't always know what the message is. I don't always know what they're showing me, but it's whatever makes sense to that person, what they remember and the experience the dog had with them. So the dog was trying really hard to get me to say Fruit Loop, but I didn't say Fruit Loop until the end. I just said cereal. I didn't know that I had to be specific and say, I'm seeing Fruit Loop cereal. So that's a perfect example of how this works, where I'm relaying the images that I'm seeing in my mind. I didn't know this woman. I didn't know anything about her. I'd never met her before. So how is that information getting through to me? Well, obviously there's a connection between me and the dog, and the dog is sending me that information. So that's the a really good example of how this works, and you know, even how I'm blown away by what our pets know about us. Our deceased pets, no matter how long they've been passed on, no matter how long they've been on the other side, they're still connected to us. They're around us. They're in their favorite spots, or they're next to us, or in the car with us, or in the house with us, and they stay connected to us. And they love it when we talk about them and remember our happy times and the things we used to do together. They love that. That's like a Christmas present for them when they hear their name. It's like they light up and they get all happy and excited, and they love being remembered. So the best thing you can do for your pets that are on the other side is to think of all those happy times and joyful memories and say their name out loud. That's just an absolute joy to them.
Do they have a reaction to new pets?
They do. And this is a question I get quite a bit, because many times after we lose a pet, we don't want to get a new one because we don't want our deceased pet to think that we're replacing them, or, you know, that we're going to love somebody more, or, you know, take the love we have for the deceased pet away. So I often get asked, you know, how does my deceased pet feel about this new one? And almost always, without exception — there's always going to be one or two in there somewhere — but almost always, your deceased pets are happy and excited and elated for you to get a new pet. And I'll tell you why. When you show love to another animal, that love emanates from your heart, and it's energy. It's an energetic feeling that goes out into the universe. Your deceased pet, who still loves you and is connected to you, receives that energetic feeling of love. Even though it's directed to another pet, it doesn't matter. If there's love coming from your heart, your deceased loved ones can feel that. And likewise, if there's sorrow, sadness, or anything else coming from you, they can pick up on those senses too. So getting another pet and loving that new pet is indirectly sending love to your deceased pets.
I want to ask about this for a couple of reasons. I happen to be looking at the table of contents, and oh, those cats kind of stood out. And then your cat started meowing. And I think a lot of times for somebody like me, who is a dog owner, and we just talk exclusively about dogs, but cats are a part of the picture. I'm curious about this because cats have a reputation, particularly among non-cat owners, for being kind of aloof and not necessarily as warm and fuzzy as maybe a dog. Is that kind of a misnomer, and does that show itself in these kind of after-death communications?
I think so. And, you know, I know my cat Owie is back there. His name is Owie for a reason, because ow, 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 that's what he says all day long. Sorry about that.
No. He actually added something to the interview. He clued me in. Maybe he was communicating with me.
I was wondering if it would pick up on him, because I can certainly hear him. But okay, so for all the dog people out there, I just have to tell you, cats are pretty amazing and phenomenal. And Jim, I just have to laugh, because I'm often asked, who's the smartest animal out there? You know, everybody wants to know which one is the smartest. And you know, while there's different levels of intelligence in dogs, cats, horses, whales, or dolphins for that matter, I always come back to cats, because I do most of my sessions with domesticated pets. So in my communication with them, I have found that if someone is going to make a fool out of me, it's going to be a cat. They have this amazing way, and cat owners know what I mean, of manipulating their environment to get what they want, to get us to do what they want us to do. They're masters at this. And I'm guilty. My cats manipulate the heck out of me. And they just have this ability to, oh gosh, for instance, if a client contacts me about a litter box issue, let's say there's multiple cats in the household, I'll check in to see which one of them is the one that's not using the litter box. They'll literally blame someone else in the house. I mean, a dog wouldn't do that. A dog would just be like, oh yeah, I did it. Yep, that was me. Pretty much, I'm the one. You know, and a cat, generally speaking, of course, they'll like blame it on someone else, even though they're the guilty party. So for that matter, I always say that cats are the ones that I say are the most intelligent ones, because they can really manipulate the situation and certainly make a fool out of me. And I've had many, many instances with cats where, especially towards the end of life, you know, our animals, just by nature, by Mother Nature alone, they are geared to cover up or mask their illnesses and their injuries. It's a survival technique out in the wild, and they've learned over the eons to cover up and mask any signs or symptoms, because out in the wild, the weak one or the sick one will be singled out and usually die from predation or from the illness or injury. So they've learned to cover up and mask things, and that's why we, as pet people, caretakers, sometimes we miss things that are going on health-wise with our pets. And cats are masters at covering up illness. You won't even know until something has really progressed that there's something wrong with your cat. So it's not that you're a bad parent or that you missed a sign. It's just that cats are really good at being cats and covering things up like that. But the thought that came to me, this one of the stories that came to me, is that I was checking in with a kitty, a very elderly kitty that was really on heaven's doorstep. I mean, he was a 17-year-old. He was in kidney failure. When I opened up his energy, I just felt like he was really ready to leave this earth. He was done. He had a full, happy life. And his body was just shutting down on him. And so I shared with his human mom that he probably didn't have much time. And, you know, she should spend some really, you know, special time with Kitty, because Kitty wasn't going to be with her for very much longer. And I saw it very short term, and I told her it's probably very short term. Well, 3 months later, she circles back to me and says, "Karen, guess who's still here?" So, you know, you just never know with a cat. They are just, they're unique, and they're so incredibly adaptive and amazing that you just never know. So, like I said, they're really good at making a fool out of me sometimes.
One thing I want to ask you about, and honestly, it's as much personally as it is for the benefit of the audience, although I'm sure many people have had to deal with this, is the question of euthanasia. You have a chapter entitled "Euthanasia, the Impossible Decision," and I agree with it. It's very, very difficult. We did have that with one of our dogs, Trouble, and he had, geez, he must have been about, I would say, 14, 15 years old. And he was a bit of a mutt. He had some German Shepherd in him, but a larger dog who lived a long lifespan, had been very, very healthy. And then in the last 6 months of his life, he just went downhill tremendously quickly. And it kind of came time for a very difficult decision. And I kind of felt like, and we were fortunate to be able to have somebody who, there's a service out here where they would come to the home. And I thought that was such a great blessing for us, because we had the opportunity for him to pass in, you know, his familiar environment and not be stressed by going elsewhere or anything like that. And some people don't have that opportunity. We did, and we were very thankful for it. But I almost sensed when he was passing, he knew what was going on. And I almost felt like he was trying to tell me, it's okay, I understand. Because my wife and my kids, they stayed in the other room because they just could not bring themselves to it. So I stayed there with him and sat with him as we went through the process. It was very, very difficult, obviously, as it is for so many people. What have you learned over the years about euthanasia and the reaction of our pets to it? Because it is such a difficult, difficult decision.
It really is. And, you know, it is an impossible decision, as I write about in the book. And what I have come to find is that there are some people who feel that it's not right to take their pet's life, that they should allow the pet to pass naturally and on their own. And then there's others that believe that it's only right for us to help them leave their body and spare them from enduring any more pain or struggle. So, you know, whatever your thought processes are, you know, it's a personal journey and you must do what feels right in your heart. Personally speaking, after communicating with as many pets as I have, the animals who pass on their own and again, I speak in general terms because there's always going to be, you know, an exception. They describe to me a much higher level of pain, discomfort, and struggle that they went through as their body was shutting down. And again, that's in varying degrees, levels of pain and discomfort. But the majority of them expressed to me that it was very painful, very traumatic, scary, and not a great experience for them. So I base my opinion on that fact that the animals that I communicate with that have been euthanized, that we have helped them leave their body through the doctor and the injection, as horrible as it is, as difficult as it is, as painful as it is to watch your animal take their last breath, those pets have reported to me with, I don't even think, maybe three exceptions in all the years I've been doing this, that the process was far less traumatic, far less stressful, basically an easier transition for them out of their body. And they didn't describe the struggle, pain, turmoil, fear of their body shutting down like the animals who had passed on their own. And that's just my own personal little experiment that I've done. Again, it's just my experiences and what I have found out. So because of that, because of what the animals and my own personal animals, you know, of course, I know what their experience was, and I make sure, you know, when they've left their body that they've transitioned smoothly and easily and that they're doing okay. So because of that, I am an advocate for euthanizing whenever possible and to try to stay as calm as you can. Animals in nature go off by themselves. They don't want us hovering around them. They don't want us overloading them with emotions and strong feelings. So you try to stay as calm as you can, think loving thoughts, and keep them as quiet as possible. And that generally is the best scenario. So that's how I base my decision. It's based on my own experiences and what the animals have told me.
It is a tough decision. And either way, I could understand, personally, I can understand either direction. It is extremely, extremely difficult. Well, there's so much more that we could talk about, but time is growing short. That's why folks should check into the book, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals, Messages and Signs from Our Pets on the Other Side. And Karen has been such a fantastic guest. Karen, where can people find the book and also more information about all of your work?
I can be found on my website, which is very simply KarenAnderson.net. And the book is now a bestseller on Amazon in Pet Loss. So I'm very excited about that. And it's in Kindle, and I'm working on the audio parts right now. So it'll be on Audible.com pretty soon. You can find me there. And I also, Jim, teach an introduction to animal communication online course, which is an introduction for people who are new to the concept and want to learn how to understand the language of the pets they love. And all of that can be found on my website of KarenAnderson.net.
Karen, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a great chat.
Thank you for having me, and I hope I get to come back soon and share more stories.
Absolutely. And thank you for joining us on Ghost Insight. What an interesting show it was. And I'll say this, your pets who are with you, I hope you continue to love them and enjoy them and treat them well as they treat you well. And for those who've lost a beloved pet, like most of us, I hope they continue to live in your hearts forever. I mean, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time on Ghost Insight. Bye-bye, everybody.